Grovalov had finished his first drink when Riley appeared. Oleg Grigorievich! The American's Russian was manifestly American and over-loud, a fine backward stealth for this environment. Mishka, Provalov said, taking the American's hand warmly and waving to the bartender. Okay, who are we looking for? The FBI agent asked more quietly.
The gray suit, 7 seats to my left.
Got him? Who is he?
He is currently under the name Konyev, Ivan Yurievich. In fact, we believe him to be Suvorov, Klementy Ivanich.
Aha. Provalov filled in what he'd learned about the hooker and what had happened the night before the murders. Oleg?
Yes, Mikhail.
He's looking at somebody over by the musicians, some Chinese. Look like two diplomats dining with two Russians. Riley turned again. One of the Chinese men excused himself and stood, heading for the men's room. Konyev Suvorov set down his drink and stood. Oleg, I want you to point me toward the men's room. Provalov extended his arm. Riley patted him on the shoulder and headed that way. He entered the men's room and saw 3 urinals, 2 of them being used. He urinated, then turned to wash his hands, looking down as he did so. Then he saw it. They scarcely touched each other. It was a classic brush pass, so well done that even Riley's experience couldn't determine who had passed what to whom. The FBI agent headed back to his seat at the bar, where he waved to the barkeep for the drink he figured he'd just earned.
You want to identify that Chinaman? He and our friend traded something in the shitter, Riley said with a smile, as Konyev Suvorov resumed his seat at the bar.
He turned and greeted the girl to his left, then waved for the bartender to get her another drink, which she accepted with a warm commercial smile.
Well, our friend's gonna get laid tonight.
And that pretty much ended the evening. Konyev Suvorov left the restaurant about 20 minutes later with the girl. One of the men who'd stayed behind walked with the Chinese to his car, which had diplomatic plates. Her name was Yang Lianhua. She was 34, 9 months pregnant, and very frightened. It was her second pregnancy. Her first had been a son, whom they had named Julong, which translated roughly as large dragon. But the youngster had died at the age of 4, bumped by a bicycle into the path of a passenger bus. The loss had been sufficiently hard on Mrs. Yang that she'd sought comfort in a way that this country's government did not approve. That way was Christianity. A co-worker had suggested that she meet a friend of hers, a man named Yu Fa An. Mrs. Yang had sought him out, and so begun her first adventure in treason. Julong, Reverend Yu told her, was with God. Mrs. Yang kept returning for private counseling, finally bringing along her husband, Kon. Soon both of the Yangs came to accept their loss with confidence in the continued life of Julong, and the belief that they would someday see him again in the presence of an almighty God. Until then, life had to go on. Both were factory workers in the same factory, and in due course, Lianhua became pregnant again. And ran afoul of the government's population control policy. It had long since been decreed that any married couple could have but one child. A second pregnancy required official government permission. Though this was not generally denied to those whose first child had died, this permission was generally withheld as a method of controlling the living population. Christianity translated into political unreliability for the communist government. For that reason, when Mrs. Yang Lianhua had registered her pregnancy, an official letter had appeared in her box instructing her to go to the Longfu Hospital for a therapeutic abortion. Lianhua wrote a week later telling them that her pregnancy had miscarried. Given the nature of bureaucracies, her lie was never checked out. The Yangs were determined not to lose a second child, who, the Reverend Yu had told them, was a gift from God himself. And there was a way. If you delivered the baby at home without medical assistance, and if the baby took its first breath, then the state would not kill it. There were some things even the government of the People's Republic quailed at. So their plan was for Lianhua to deliver the child at home, and if anything went badly wrong, they'd go to Reverend Yu for counsel and advice.
So, what did you develop last night? Riley asked Provalov.
Our Chinese friend, the one in the men's room, that is the third secretary at their mission. Our friends across town at SVR have suspected that he is a member of their Ministry for State Security.
ID the girl?
Yelena Ivanova Dmitrova, Provalov handed the folder across. A whore, but a very expensive one. I have four men watching his apartment. If he leaves, I will try to get a team into his apartment to plant some electronic surveillance. Now, I have a question for you.
Shoot.
What do you know of a special counter-terrorist group based in England?
The Men of Black, you mean?
Provalov nodded.
I don't know anything more than what I've seen in the papers.
It's some sort of multinational NATO group, part military and part police.
Why do you ask?
A request from on high, because I know you. I've been told that they are coming to Moscow to assist in training our people, Spetsnaz groups, with similar tasks.
I want the files for everyone who ever worked with him, Sergei Nikolaevich ordered, and I want you to get me his personal file.
Yes, Comrade Chairman, Major Shalepin replied.
And we will set up a special action group to work with this Provalov child.
Now he was more frightened than he'd been that bright Moscow morning. His hunter might be one of his own, a former KGB officer, and if he were in contact with the Chinese. But why would the Chinese wish to end his life?
None of this made any sense, but Golovko had long since shed the illusion that the world was supposed to make sense.